Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Dean Cheng, a friend and colleague from the Heritage Foundation, where he is a senior research fellow in the Asian Studies Center. He specializes there on China's military and foreign policies. He's had a distinguished career in other institutions around town, including Science Applications International, or SAIC. He's also been a senior analyst with the Center for Naval Analysis. It's always good to have him with us, especially to sort of be a bookend for his friend and colleague's conversation with me a moment ago, Derek Scissors. Dean, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I spoke with Dr. Scissors about China's economy, Dean, and one of the things that we sort of teased out was the possible implications of stagnation, as he calls it, in that sphere, for the political circumstances within China, and possibly the slop over into the area that you are most expert in, namely the military capabilities and ambitions of China. Give us a sense of whether you are concerned, as am I, that what China may be doing in response to its internal difficulties, political as well as economic, is manufacturing threats and perhaps provoking conflict outside of China.
Well, I think that certainly as we look at the evolution of China's internal political situation, what we can see is that the Communist Party of China, the CCP, has gone from having what I call has gone from a tricycle to a bicycle to a unicycle. It used to basically base its legitimacy on three things, quote-unquote equality, the old Mao-era shared levels of misery, if you will, to conflate Churchill and Mao. A promise of economic growth so that even if you might not live better, your children would live better, and nationalism, kicking the foreigners out, defending China's borders, etc. Well, equality went out with Deng Xiaoping. China has several hundred billionaires, several thousand millionaires, and millions of people live on $2, $3, $4 a day. The economy is slowing down, and we already have seen efforts to return migrant laborers within China back to their home provinces. So, again, you are seeing, if you are Chinese, a real closing of opportunity. The promise that your children will live better. So what does that leave you? That leaves you now with the single wheel of nationalism. Now, what that means is this is in some ways very, very dangerous because not only does it create an incentive to not compromise, but China also has a very different view of its territory. I think it's important to recognize that from the Chinese perspective, the South China Sea is not Danzig, is not Alsace-Lorraine, it's not somebody else's territory that they are trying to take. From the Chinese perspective, they are defending what they think is theirs. That creates a very different incentive structure, a very different mental attitude than trying to take somebody else's things.
Though there are quite a number of people who think that's exactly what they're doing. Dean, just to stay with the earlier thought, though, and I think that analysis, the historical evolution, is very instructive. One of the things that that Derek was talking about was that the Chinese Communist Party still enjoys a lot of loyalty from the Chinese people because it has brought prosperity to so many. You've painted a rather different picture, and it certainly suggests that the external threat, manufactured or otherwise, the need to pull together as a nation against the foreigners may well resonate with lots of Chinese. Given what you know, and you're one of the country's foremost experts on these matters, about the Chinese military buildup that has been taking place in recent years, does this augur for a very dangerous time, in your judgment, perhaps for us, certainly for China's neighbors?
Well, to begin with, I don't think that Derek and I disagree very much at all. I would say that I would agree with him that China, the Chinese people have certainly come to enjoy a higher standard of living within the lifetime, within the memory of the bulk of the Chinese people. in part because of things that the CCP did. For example, Chinese literacy has gone from, we think, maybe 20% in 1949 to something like 90%, 95% today. So, you know, there is electrification for most of the country, etc. The CCP argues that it is the force that has generated that change. The problem is that you have the challenge of rising expectations. What was good enough to make people happier in 1959 is not going to cut it in 2019. In that situation, the military becomes partly the symbol of accomplishment. Just had the recent 70th anniversary parade through Tiananmen Square with a lot of China's latest military equipment. In a sense, this is a statement to the Chinese people. This is what all that money, all that newfound economic power has bought you. If you are China's neighbors, you look at that and you should be nervous.
Notably, that missile with the Guam killer on the side of it in English, no less. Yeah, no, that ought to get people's attention. But let me ask you, Dean. Here we have the president of the United States in the aftermath of that parade, and by the way, there was another one that said carrier killer, as I recall. And what has been going on in the South China Sea, and a near miss of an intercept of a U.S. reconnaissance aircraft by a Chinese, as the Chinese president was in the United States. Do you think that the Chinese people are being encouraged to perceive what is going on here as evidence that China is being treated as a superior power by the United States, the tradition of kowtowing by the barbarian to the great Chinese leader?
I'm not sure what the Chinese people are being told. We know that the Chinese media censors an awful lot of information, but I think among the Chinese leadership, that is certainly the image that is being cultivated. The fundamental reality is that we have an administration that is acting against the best advice of its own military. And by administration here, I'm talking about the United States. Admiral Harris, Pacific Command, have apparently said, we want to sail within 12 nautical miles of these artificial islands down in the South China Sea that, because they're artificial, exert no 12 nautical mile territorial waters, no EEZ. And in testimony, it turns out that not only is it the White House that has blocked that, but it has blocked it for 3 years. Now, think about that. This is not, look, we have a summit coming up. Let's not roil the waters just before the summit. That happens in repeated administrations. This is a White House that is literally, on the one hand, saying, this, you know, these islands are not acceptable. They send Ash Carter out to Singapore to say these islands are not acceptable, and then undercut the entire DOD, military, you know, folks in uniform and civilians, by saying, you know, I don't care what you said publicly, I'm not going to let you do it. And the Chinese aren't stupid. They know exactly where we are.
And this almost certainly is being translated by them into a greater and greater sense of a window of opportunity to act against, as I say, our vital interests and those of our allies. Dean Cheng, let me ask you in closing, and we've only got about a minute left, what do you expect out of the conversations between President Obama and President Xi Jinping about cyber warfare?
I think that we are going to see almost nothing. The administration has been running backwards. The claim that there was going to be some kind of cyber confidence building measure. At best, it'll be symbolic, some kind of quote-unquote no first use against critical infrastructure, considering that the Chinese insist that they don't do anything cyber at all. If the administration accepts that, it is just signaling again that China can tell the biggest whoppers out there, and this administration will take them seriously.
I fear you're right on all counts. Dean Cheng, we have to leave it at that for the moment. It's a grim prospect, to say the least, and more grim news may flow from it. But you're covering it brilliantly at the Heritage Foundation. We appreciate your time with us today and look forward to talking with you again. DeRoy Murdoch is up next. We'll talk with him about the Islamic State, Iran, and more right after this.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.